Hi, I'm Rachel Michelle Wilson. I'm a children's book author and illustrator, and I'd rather sit at the kid table than anywhere else.
You can sit with me. You can sit with me. You can sit with me at the kid table.
This week, I'm sitting at the kid table with, drumroll please, children's book author, illustrator Maurice Sendak again. That's because we are on part two of our two-part study. Thank you so much for all the love you gave part one. It makes me so happy that I get to geek out about the stuff I love with you. And somehow, in the very first week, we've already hit enough podcast downloads to put us in the top 25% of podcasts. Wow. Okay, I don't understand the data, so I am... It'd be cool if that was true, but whether or not that is true, I just want to say thank you for listening. All right, let's dive into part two, shall we? Part one was all about his life, influences, and work. You can check out part one on my Substack. For part two, we're exploring 8 things I learned from his creative process and philosophy. Whether you are a reader, a bookmaker, or a cool cat looking for inspiration, I crafted this episode to have something jazzy just for you. Number 1. Telling the truth is a risk worth taking. Sendak's storytelling is best summed up in his words, "I think what I've offered was different not because I drew better than anybody or wrote better than anybody, but because I was more honest than anybody." And in the discussion of children and the lives of children and the fantasies of children and the language of children, I said anything I wanted to. I don't believe in this demarcation like, you mustn't tell them that. If it's true, you tell them. Well, he definitely told the truth about anger and the difficulty of parent-child relationships in Where the Wild Things Are, and it received pretty bad reviews at first. Sendak responded to the backlash in his Caldecott Medal acceptance speech for Where the Wild Things Are, yes, most people came around eventually, by sharing his dislike of what he called half-true children's books that offer a gilded world unshadowed by the least suggestion of conflict or pain, a world manufactured by those who cannot or don't care to remember the truth of their own childhood. He argued that these books were more concerned with not frightening adults and had no relation to the way real children live. Using Where the Wild Things Are as an example, he concluded, "The common wish to protect children from their everyday fears and anxieties is a hopeless wish that denies the child's endless battle with disturbing emotions. The book doesn't say that life is constant anxiety. It simply says that life has anxiety in it." I love his speech so much because I think we are often afraid that telling the truth means hopelessness. But for Sendak, telling the truth meant acknowledging that darkness and light exist together and that true hope comes from representing both on the page. After reading Wild Things, the great writer and mythology genius Joseph Campbell said he loved it because it is only when a man tames his own demons that he becomes the king of himself, not the world. Sendak consistently took risks by facing his demons and sharing the truth about his experiences. To this day, his stories allow kids a safe space to do the same. Thing I learned number 2, always remember you don't know anything. This one's short and sweet, but very important. When interviewers asked Sendak questions like, what makes a good children's book? He always answered the same way. Well, how would I know? It seems to me like this allowed him to maintain a learner mindset throughout his life, which actually leads me to the next thing I learned. Number 3, you are never too old to learn. He said, it's a constant fountain, a source of refreshment to go to the masters. They have done so much that we can learn from. Throughout his life, Sendak loved learning from others. Even in the last few years of his life, he was talking with interviewers about what he was reading or listening to and describing the stories he wanted to tell. He took inspiration from books, comics, plays, music, and family, and his studio was full of objects to keep in the mood of whatever he was working on, like a fragile brontosaurus his nephew built for him, which I thought was really adorable. Sendak was an atheist, but he considered some of his inspirations as wonderful gods who have gotten me through the narrow straits of life. He especially loved William Blake, partly because he couldn't fully understand him, He said, "I guess it's the way his profound belief in something sounds kind of idiotic, but I believe him. I believe in his passion." He delighted in Mozart. He said, "I am in conjunction with something I can't explain. I don't need to. I know that if there's a purpose for life, it was for me to hear Mozart." He carried a pocketbook of Emily Dickinson everywhere he went. "She is so brave," he said. "She is so strong. She is such a passionate little woman. After reading 3 poems, I feel better," he said. He loved Alice in Wonderland so much that he stole a copy from his cousin. "It's a terrifying book. It's a nightmare. That to me comes as close to the world of childhood as great books do. Carol was allowing for nightmare, murderous impulses. I don't know why he got away with it. He told the truth about childhood, about how unsafe it was." Interestingly, he disliked Peter Pan because of the sentimental idea that anybody would want to remain a boy. He said this was a conceit that could only occur in the mind of a very sentimental writer, that any child would want to remain in childhood. It's not possible. The wish is to get out. I had never thought about it that way, but I find that an interesting perspective. Overall, every creator he admired had the same quality, what he called authentic liveliness. Isn't that a wonderful phrase? And for those interested, I included a giant list of all of the influences I could find that Sendak had mentioned in his interviews. So that will be in the Substack post if you want to know more. Okay, thing number 4, let your other obsessions inform your work. Animation was a big inspiration for his work. As we know from last week, Mickey Mouse was a huge deal for him and inspired him to become an illustrator. And he loved making his illustrations dance off the page like a flipbook. Music was also a major part of his process. Sendak couldn't live without a record player, and the music he listened to informed his work. He said, "Depending on what I'm doing at the moment, there is always a specific kind of music I want to listen to. All composers have different colors, as all artists do, and I kind of pick up the right color from either Haydn or Mozart or Wagner while I'm working, and very often I will switch recordings endlessly until I get the right color and the right note and the right sound, and then settle down happily into whatever I'm doing." I thought that was fascinating how he combined colors and music together with his work. He often drew parallels between art forms. Like one night he was listening to Wagner, and though he knew it by heart, this time he heard something fresh. He explained that Wagner, in some mysterious way, had made the atmosphere, the very night air of Nuremberg, into music. He said, "I could see the city and smell it, and that's the kind of thing I want to convey in my illustrations. The pictures should be so organically akin to the text, so reflective of its atmosphere, that they look as if they could have been done in no other way. They should help create the special world of the story. When this kind of drawing works, I feel like a magician because I'm creating the air for a writer." Isn't that idea of creating the air so beautiful? I'm going to be pondering on that one for a while. Okay, thing number 5, understand your why. Sendak didn't like the term children's books and preferred books that children like. He said, "I don't write for children. I don't write for adults. I just write." He often said things like he didn't believe in childhood at all. There are many interpretations of this philosophy, but when taken together, I think he meant he believes in children as whole people with complicated interior lives, capable of feeling all the big feelings and adult experiences. He didn't like it how children were dismissed as just children, like the phrase itself had all these connotations for adults. Basically, he wanted kids to get more credit. Here are a few quotes to back that up. He said, "There is something about this country that is so opposed to understanding the complexity of children. It's quite amazing. I've always had a deep respect for children and how they solve complex problems by themselves," the interviewer asked. "And how do they?" He said, "Through shrewdness, fantasy, and just plain strength. They want to survive. They want to survive." In a different interview, he said, "Grown-ups desperately need to feel safe, and then they project onto the kids. But what none of us seem to realize is how smart kids are. They don't like what we write for them, what we dish up for them, because it's vapid. So they'll go for the hard words. They'll go for the hard concepts. They'll go for the stuff where they can learn something. Not didactic things, but passionate things." I love that distinction between books, like kids being able to learn something from books is not about making it didactic. It's about making it passionate. Oh, so good. Okay. But then we get to some quotes that kind of complicate this clarity we've achieved here. You ready for this? He said, "I don't write for children, I write." And somebody says, "That's for children." "I didn't set out to make children happy or make life better for them or easier for them." The interviewer asked, "Do you like them?" And then Sendak said, "I like them as few and far between as I do adults. Maybe a bit more because I really don't like adults." So that could be kind of confusing, right? But here's another quote that clears it up. "You cannot write for children. They're much too complicated. You can only write books that are of interest to them." Okay, what does this all mean? What a roller coaster. I think he's saying that he doesn't feel like his books are meant to provide answers or to teach kids. He's just trying to write an interesting book that's truthful, because that's great literature and that's what they deserve. All right, on to thing number 6. Respect your audience, especially your inner child. This relates to the previous one, but we're going to build on it from here. Sendak didn't idealize childhood at all. He said, "Too many parents and too many writers of children's books don't respect the fact that kids know a good deal and suffer a great deal." And he believed the magic of childhood is the strangeness of childhood. Okay, that quote right there is so cool. Another thing that I'm going to be pondering for a long time. He remembered being a creature without power, without pocket money, without escape routes of any kind, who didn't want to be a child. Because of this, he always tried to draw the way children feel, instead of focusing on what he called the naturalistic beauty of a child. When talking about the process of trying to honor the child, he said, now this is a very long quote and I've broken it up, but I just couldn't summarize it because it's so much better when you hear it from him. Okay. Here's what he said. "All I have to go on is what I know, not only about my childhood then, but about the child I was as he exists now. You see, I don't believe in a way that the kid I was grew up into me. He still exists somewhere in the most graphic, plastic, physical way. One of my worst fears is losing contact with him. I don't want this to sound coy or schizophrenic, but at least once a day I feel I have to make contact." He continued, "The pleasures I get as an adult are heightened by the fact that I experience them as a child at the same time. Like when autumn comes, as an adult I welcome the departure of the heat, and simultaneously, as a child would, I start anticipating the snow and the first day it will be possible to use a sled." He explained that it wasn't always easy to connect with his inner child. When his creative process wasn't going well, he said, "I get a sour feeling about books in general and my own in particular. The next stage is annoyance at my dependence on this dual apperception, and I reject it. Then I become depressed. When excitement about what I'm working on returns, so does the child. We're on happy terms again. Being in that kind of contact with my childhood is vital to me, but it doesn't make me perfectly certain I know what I'm doing in my work." Okay, any creators listening, I feel like how can you not relate to that? That process is exactly what I experience every time I'm making a book. Anyway, all right, let's continue. Even after winning the Caldecott, Sendak didn't let an award affect his deep respect of children. He said, "Why would any book be good for all children? I mean, no grown-up book is good for all people, so you mustn't assume that a book that won a Caldecott is appropriate for every child reading it." Can't you just hear the respect coming from that? But he did love it whenever a child would react positively to his work. He said when creating books, his first priority was to always reach and keep hold of the child in me, and second, to reach his audience. I think that is really, really great advice, and the way he describes how he connected with his inner child, I think will help me continue to find ways to connect with my inner child, and I hope will help you as well. Okay, thing number 7 that I learned. Respect the object. To facilitate the best reading experience, Sendak believed books needed to be designed and treated like beautiful objects. He said, "Reading is a physical act. Every book that is manufactured should have textures and qualities and smells as though it were a toy, as though it were something precious. And then when you're read to by a parent, you have the whole thing, parent, child, and book fusion. That's something television or any other form cannot give a human being." His deep respect for the object included bookmaking. He said, "If one picks up a book and is dazzled by the beauty of the book and nothing else, one has failed. It should harmonize so that you cannot separate the book from the binding, the end papers, the title page, the frontispiece. It should all become so blended, so uniform, that the feeling is that there is positively no other way this possibly could have been done. Doesn't that inspire you to learn more about bookmaking? I'll never look at a book the same way again after reading his philosophy of books. Okay, thing number 8, our final thing. Respect the craft. Because of his respect for his audience and the form, Sendak took his craft very seriously. He asked himself, why would a child turn the page? A child isn't polite. I mean, adults will conscientiously read a book they don't like because they feel they should. Children don't feel any such compulsion. If they hate the first 2 pages, it's whammo against the wall. They don't care if it's won 18 Caldecott Awards, so you've got to catch them. You've got to catch them in a rhythmic pattern, a syncopation that makes them turn that page. Continuing with the music metaphor, you see he loves music, he said, you got to catch them with your metronome right from the start so they syncopate with the book. Children hum and move when they're reading in a book, and they're turning pages and looking for pictures. The timing has to be intuitive to an incredible degree. This is why he called writing tremendously difficult and spoke of the incredible patience making book requires, as sometimes it took him 5 to 10 years to complete a book. What kept him going? His permanent dissatisfaction, he said. The need in him to achieve something of incredible height for his own sake, and the fact it made him happy. He said, making books is the only true happiness I've ever, ever, ever endured in my life. It's sublime. It's just going into another room and making pictures. It's magic time, where all your weakness of character and blemishes of personality and whatever else torments you fades away. Ugh, isn't that beautiful? And that's what I love about creativity, is it's this in-between place where you are yourself, but you don't have all these expectations on you when you're just playing, and all the weaknesses, blemishes, like he talked about, the things torturing you can fade away because you're just focusing on you and your art. Ugh, love it. And perhaps my favorite quote from him on craft is this: the art of illustrating is like any other art, the art of growing up into oneself. Thank you so much for sitting with me at the kid table today. Thanks to Whiskey Geraldine for our podcast music, Joanna Roland, Marietta Apollonio, and Angela Fam Kranz for sponsoring this episode. To become a podcast sponsor, you can upgrade to a paid newsletter subscription at rachelmichellewilson.substack.com. Until next time, as always, I'll save you a seat right next to me.